It's Monday, July 25th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, frustrating, I guess, is the word of the day after a loss in the finale of the weekend series at Chicago. The Guardians had a chance to take three out of four. They had a chance to actually sweep the series had they not lost the nightcap of the doubleheader on Saturday, but they had Shane Bieber going on the mound Sunday, and they ran into Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease did what he can do, and you know, really sort of kept the Guardians hitters at bay. And Shane Bieber had one really rough inning in an otherwise pretty good outing. Hung a couple of sliders that got hit out of the ballpark, and the Guardians ended up losing 6-3. He described the outing afterwards as frustrating. Just because he had been off for 12 days, hadn't pitched, and kind of a weird decision not to pitch your ace earlier in the series, I guess, after, you know, he hadn't, you know, been on the mound, I guess, in what, almost 2 weeks.
Yeah, tough, strange decision, I guess. You know, the way Francona explained it is, I guess, you know, Bieber had the longest to travel during the break. He went home to California. He said he had wedding plans to work out with his fiance. So when he came back, he didn't, I guess, I don't know how much he threw over the break or if he threw it all. You know, they decided, you know, to go with the pitchers that, you know, to rearrange the rotation and go with the pitchers that had worked, you know, had gotten some work in during the break. McKenzie stayed in Cleveland and threw, you know, off the mound at Progressive Field. It sounded like the other guys got some work in as well. And so Bieber goes on Sunday, you know, when he got rained out of the last game before the break, you know, and you would think, you know, ideally he would have come out and pitched on that Friday night against Chicago, you know, if you keep him in line. But, you know, they rearranged the rotation, and, you know, Bieber was, like you said, Joe, he struggled early, came back and locked it in. But by that time, you know, he gave up the five runs in the second inning, and you know, the game was pretty much over. Even though Cease, you know, the Guardians hit him, you know, hit him early. They kind of had some chances. They couldn't cash in. But Cease was a little rusty from the break as well.
Right, yeah. He didn't have his typical, you know, 10 strikeout performance. Cease didn't. And there was a lot of traffic. The Guardians had actually out-hit the White Sox throughout the game. It was just those two mistake pitches that Bieber threw. And I guess, you know, when you haven't been on the mound and you haven't thrown your signature slider, I guess, enough times, Lurie Garcia, who had only hit three home runs all year, drives one out of the park. And then AJ Pollock, he gets in a bad count, gets in a bad situation. And Pollock sits on a slider and drives it out of the park again for a three run home run. We're just not used to seeing that from Shane Bieber. But what we did see after that was he locked it back in. He got back, you know, to what we expect, and gave them at least six innings so that they didn't have to burn out their bullpen.
Yeah, that was important coming off that doubleheader on Saturday, and especially going into this, you know, the two next series of this kind of a really a tough road trip. You know, now they're in Boston for three, and then you go to Tampa Bay for the weekend series.
Right. Well, we'll get to Boston here in a second because they're in a unique situation of their own, a little different than the last time we saw them, but. Just to wrap up the Chicago series, it's pretty much a stalemate there. They're three games back now in the AL Central.
Yeah, three games back in the AL Central, two games out of the third wild card spot.
And they gave up a game there to Chicago as well in terms of you know, they're standing ahead of them. So you know, all the positive energy we were feeling after that first game of the doubleheader on Saturday, where you know, they came out, Josh Naylor had another clutch hit and beat Liam Hendricks. The Guardians rallied in that game to sort of win, and then the nightcap was a little more frustrating. Tito said after that nightcap where they sort of battled, took the lead, lost the lead, that, you know, it was a positive, the way they played, the way they showed their competitiveness in both the games of that doubleheader, but particularly in the night game where they lost. You know, he was not discouraged by that effort.
Yeah, they lose 5-4, Joe. You know, they're really, you know, Lance Lynn just, you know, throws goose eggs at them for 6 innings. They don't do anything against it. They're down 3-0. Then, you know, as soon as Lynn gets out of there, they score 4 runs in the seventh against two of the White Sox better relievers. You know, so they got a 4-3 lead, and they do it, you know, in Guardians fashion, you know, singles. There was a bunch of singles. There was two triples, a triple by Rosario, a triple by, a Straw. And, you know, they score 4 runs. And then you think, okay, they've got it. You know, they're going to come back. They're going to get the sweep. But Chicago, you know, kind of turns the tables on them and scores 2 in the 9th. And 2 in the 8th, I should say, they get out of there with a 5-4 win, and really kind of, you know, change that whole you know, momentum of that series.
Yeah, that's really what happened. It sort of shifted on one at bat, and it was the bases loaded single against Brian Shaw there, where they took the lead. So, yeah. Frustrating, I guess, is the word we open this podcast with. I guess it's a frustrating result after they had the opportunity there to sort of make up some ground and put some distance between themselves and the White Sox. As far as moving forward now into the Red Sox series, you get 4 against the Red Sox in Fenway. This is not the same this is not the same Red Sox team that swept the Guardians earlier in May.
Yeah, definitely. They are struggling big time. You know, Toronto went in there and swept a 3-game series from Boston at Fenway. They outscored them 40-9, Joe, in those 3 games. The one game they scored 28 runs. They beat the Red Sox 28-5. The most runs the Red Sox, I think, have ever scored, or matching the most runs the Red Sox have ever given up. So they've lost 9-10, 3-13, and they've got a bunch of guys on the injured list.
Yeah, that's chief among them is Rafael Devers, who really ate up Guardians pitching when they played at Progressive Field. They don't have Devers. I believe Trevor Story is also on the injured list as well. So the lineup will look a little different. The pitching rotation could look a lot different. There's a big hole sort of in that in the series. Both sides haven't named a starter for Tuesday's game. Of course, we sort of looking at options for the Guardians. There aren't a lot. It depends on who's available off the 40 man, or if they have to make a roster move to be able to get somebody up from the minors to make that start on Tuesday.
Yeah, you know, it really, Pilkington, you know, their go-to guy, they went to him already, and he's back down in the minors at Triple-A, so they can't bring him up. And, you know, I don't know, do they go to a bullpen game, Joe, or do they add a guy to the 40-man? Do they add, Xavion Curry, or do they bring up Logan Allen, or, you know, but they'd have to make a move on the 40 man for each of those guys. Right. And,
right.
And then I guess you've got, you know, Tanner Tully and McCarty down there, maybe, you know, but I don't, we're still a little bit unclear if they're on the 40 man as well.
Right. Yeah. That's they've both been designated for assignment within the last month. They've both been, cleared waivers, accepted other assignments, and then come back to the club. So, you know, I think either one of those guys, they both made starts for the Guardians, you know, this season. I think either one of them could be an option depending on timing, or, you know, do we find out if the organization thinks Curry or Logan Allen are ready? And I guess it, you know, what the roster move is going to be will determine, you know, that the answer to that question, are they ready, you know, one way or another. But I think those are pretty much the options right now. Or like you said, a bullpen game, which I don't think, Tino wants to do.
Yeah, I mean, they're not adverse to, starting a rookie at Fenway. They did it with Plesac, who's, going tonight. That's where he made his big league debut. But they really haven't had that hot a pitcher. They haven't had, those hot pitching prospects like we saw with Savali and Bieber and Plesac when they brought those guys up a couple of years ago when they had all the injuries in the starting rotation. So it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds.
Yeah, and it's not that they don't have those prospects. Those prospects are in the pipeline. It's just that they're not all ready at the same time and ready to go. And I guess, in my mind, I think Logan Allen might be the guy that they sort of want to see in that take that, role. But who knows? Xavion Curry might be ready. He stepped forward and his debut in Columbus was really solid. So we'll see if any of those predictions come true. As far as where they're headed with this series, it four games in Boston. It means a lot in terms of, just the ability to go there and play well. Is this offense ready to go into Columbus, or I'm sorry, into Boston and, hit there in Fenway? We saw them over the weekend, the top of the order, Rosario, Kwan had an amazing series. He was something like 7-for-15 in the series against Chicago. Hosey was Hosey, and Josh Naylor had a really strong series. The top three or four guys in the batting order are really sort of putting together what, the Guardians offense is supposed to be.
Yeah, you're right, Joe. And I really like what Straw's doing in the ninth spot, kind of, and linking up with Kwan in the number one spot. And they really kind of, he's turning the order over. I think he's got on base, 15 straight games now. The guy that was, that 2 month slump or whatever it was seems to be over. And, they're really, they both guys can run. And Kwan is just, Joe, how do you think he handles that inside pitch when he's so close to the plate? I mean, guys try to bust him inside and he's just so quick that they can't get the ball by him.
Right. Well, and his hands are back. He keeps his hands back. He doesn't jump at the ball. And that's really the key for him, is when his hands aren't arriving too early, he's able to fight off pitches and live to see another pitch. And that's when he gets mistakes and he's able to put him in play. You saw that yesterday in his last at bat of the game, where, he fouled off a bunch of pitches from Liam Hendricks and was able to get to a pitch that he could handle and loft it, to the right side and, barely get it over the fence for his second home run of the season.
Yeah, that's a great point. And then even in the second game of, that nightcap Saturday night, he lines out to second base with the tying run on third. I mean, Josh Harrison made a nice play on him, but, that's the tying run. And he's just hit line drives all over the place. I really love when he goes to left field, too, the opposite way, just and beats a shift. And really, this guy's, really an interesting player. And he's, he looks like a keeper, Joe.
Yeah, he's hot right now, and he's getting back to the level that he was at the beginning of the season, and he's been able to make adjustments, and that's been, really outstanding for the top of the order. Who knows? He could be there as their leadoff hitter for quite some time if he keeps that up. A lot of fun watching Kwan, and also another guy that you mentioned, Straw, heating back up. We saw a little bit of it out of Framil Reyes. He hit a 2-run home run yesterday. He had a hitting streak heading into the last two games of the series. I think it's been a slow progress, but since he's come back from his stint in the minors, Framil is sort of putting it together. The numbers don't jump off the page, but he's got to be feeling a little bit better about himself.
Yeah, especially going into Fenway, you know, you got the monster there. If he can turn on a couple pitches, but he seems to be going, you know, kind of concentrating on going the other way to me, Joe. I mean, yeah. You know, hitting the ball up the middle, and you know, big guys like that. That's usually a, you know, a good sign of things to come. So we'll see how he does at Fenway. Another guy that just keeps impressing me, Joe, is Rosario. I mean, I think he makes his whole offense go. I we've talked a lot about him perhaps being on the trading block, but boy, I can't see them trading this guy right now. Can you?
I really can. I think that's what's going to happen. I do think that they're going to trade him. I think there's a possibility that they trade both Rosario and Reyes, but Reyes, you know, certainly he would fetch the most right now in terms of a prospect haul. And if they're really committed to what they're doing, I think they need to see what they've got in terms of a young shortstop and bring up somebody like a Gabriel Arias and let that go for the rest of the season. I don't think that they're in the mode right now to sort of plan for winning at the end of this season. That's just, it's just my opinion. I don't have any, you know, anything to back that up in terms of talking to Antonetti or Chernoff, but I history indicates that, you know, that they would probably make that move.
Wow. I mean, it kind of, they're caught in between, you know. I think, like we've said before, I think they're a little ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got a chance at the wild card. They've got it, you know, they've certainly still in the division race. You know, their track record says they'll add if they're in this position, but they've got all these guys knocking on the door. They've got to do something with them. But I just think they're a completely different team without Rosario. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, and God love Arias, you know, but I just haven't seen enough of him. Can he do what Rosario is doing for this club on both sides of the ball?
I don't think they would expect him to come up here and do what Rosario is doing. I think it would be sending a message, you know, by trading him, saying, look, you know, we're committed to what the plan was. And I really think that that's the case. So maybe he comes out and has a monster series in Fenway, and, you know, their fortunes shift and they get closer to a wild card, and it makes it impossible for Antonetti to trade him. But the only way that happens is if he gets like ultra hot, like white hot, like we saw him, I believe it was in August of last year, you know, the way he hit the ball. If he gets that hot again, then maybe it changes the way you think about him, not just for this year, but for the future.
Yeah, it's not like he's 30 years old either, you know. So, right. You know, so it's going to be an interesting call, you know, come the end of this month, you know, and you know, in the start of August, just what exactly they do, you know, and we'll get a clear indication of, you know, just how the front office feels about their chances of contending, or are they, you know, are they going to, you know, hold course here and keep going with the young kids?
Well, I'll tell you, on August 3rd, if Rosario is still a member of the Guardians, you could see, you know, with everything, we've seen what happens when he's in a good headspace in terms of, you know, he's the shortstop and the number two hitter. If he knows those two things as certainties, you're going to see as good as he's been lately, you're going to see a guy who can get even better, because when he's locked in, he's been so productive. He's been the best hitter, you know, really one of the more productive hitters in this lineup, aside from Jose Ramirez, over the last, you know, season and a half.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
All right. The Hall of Fame induction ceremonies took place Sunday in Cooperstown, and obviously the headliner was David Ortiz, first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't think anybody can argue with that. He gave a tremendous speech. You know, he was sort of the center of attention there. A typical Big Poppy. Everybody loves him. And you know, what did you take away from David Ortiz getting inducted into the Hall of Fame?
Just, you know, really interesting guy, Joe. Big time clutch hitter, big time, you know, hitter in the postseason. And he's, you know, he kind of a fringy, you know, he's on that cusp of, did he use steroids or didn't he? He's one of those one guys, and this is the guy that kind of, you know, jumped the shark here. He made it, you know. A lot of other guys with that taint about him didn't do it, and I think his personality, his forthcoming, his honesty about it, and it just his personality and his kind of and his performance, on the field, I think overwhelmed people. And I think he was an easy choice to vote for and get into the Hall of Fame. And an interesting guy, fun guy to be around, fun guy to listen to, and a great speech.
Yeah, not a lot of guys in baseball have big personalities. Not a lot of guys have big personalities and the credentials to back it up. So I guess Ortiz is, his personality didn't get him into the Hall of Fame, but it certainly didn't hurt getting him in on the first ballot there. Other guys that were inducted, Buck O'Neill from the Negro Leagues was an era committee selection. He passed years, I believe, class of 2006 when the Negro League greats were inducted. He's sort of, just one of these bit larger than life figures when you talk about the impact that the Negro Leagues had on the game of baseball.
Yeah, Buck O'Neill, managed in the Negro Leagues, played in the Negro Leagues. He was, coached for the Cubs for a long, long time. He was a guy that signed Lee Smith. He was a guy that signed Lou Brock. Just an all around baseball guy. And, he really, when a lot of the Negro League players gained entry into the Hall of Fame, he missed by one vote on one of the era committees to get in. But the Hall of Fame still asked him to introduce these, the players at the Hall of Fame. And he was gracious enough to do that. And, that kind of personality, he really bridged the gap between the Negro Leagues and the big leagues, and that integration that took place. And, just a great, a great tribute. The only problem is I wish he was still alive to have accepted it. And, Kansas City loves him. They have that, the Buck O'Neill seat that they give away every game at Royal Stadium that's, someone gets to sit in. Just, if you saw, what was the documentary on baseball?
The Ken Burns baseball.
Oh, yeah. God, he was the star of that. Right. I've watched that a million times, and he brings a smile to my face every time he comes on there. He really kind of, that was an awakening for, I think, not only for every baseball fan, but, and it put him on the map.
Right. Other guys, Gil Hodges gets in, Tony Oliva gets in. And Minnie Minoso, who was really a barrier breaker, and he played in Cleveland, Cleveland and with the White Sox. So it was a big weekend for both of those franchises. Just a really great thing to have Minnie Minoso in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, Minnie, played in the Negro Leagues. He the Indians signed him. Brought him to the big leagues. They traded him to the White Sox, and the White Sox traded him back. He was my favorite player, Joe, growing up. He was the first guy I saw, at the old stadium slide headfirst into first base. I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Wow. That's all it took. After that, Hoinsie was hooked. Minnie Minoso, known for his speed, known for his quickness too. But just I believe he was one of the first, Latin players to sort of, he broke barriers the same way that that Jackie Robinson did, and is deserving of that sort of recognition.
Yeah, definitely. Clemente said Minnie Minoso was his hero. That led that prove to him that he could play in the big leagues. So, you know, he was the first, Latin American to break into the big leagues. The Cuban Comet, you know, he and there's a great story when Oliva got cut from the Twins. You know, Minnie said, you know, you got to give it another shot. And he was going to go home to Cuba, and Oliva, you know, stuck it out, and he's in the Hall of Fame.
That's great. They both go in together. All right, Hoynes, we're going to wrap up here. We'll be back again tomorrow to recap the first game of the Boston series here on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.
All right, Joe.